Sister Annie thinks I'm a science project. But you know something? I guess I'm not so average anymore.
Hey everyone, welcome once again to The Secret World of Cal and Jack, in which Cal and Jack watch Alex Mack. I'm Jack, and joining me as always, it's Callan.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, 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 Callan. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling all right.
You feeling good?
Feeling
good about The Secret World of Alex Mack, episode 19?
Yeah.
And are you feeling good about learning a brand new Mac fact?
Ooh, yes, please.
Don't you want a Mac fact? Don't you want a fact?
So, Callan, today's Mac fact is actually legitimately a fact about the TV show Alex Mack.
Oh, it's nice to have something new.
Today's Mac fact comes courtesy of an article in the Huffington Post, which was an Alex Mack retrospective published in November 2012.
Mm-hmm.
In this article, I read this today, and I learnt that they were interviewing the creator of the show, Tom Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
And while developing The Secret World of Alex Mack, Tom Lynch said the network had only one note: make the title character Alex, who was originally written as a boy, into a girl.
And change her middle name to Louise.
Yeah, obviously. Well, Jane. I mean, that kind of goes without saying.
Yeah. Yep.
Being a female of the human species. The next paragraph, it kind of, he gives more of his view on in the next paragraph. He says, I think the success of it laid in the fact that I didn't write a gender, I wrote a character. Myself and Ken Lippman, who co-wrote the pilot with me, we didn't change it to be a girl, we just had a character.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there was no reference to Alex Mack being female originally. It was just assumed she was a boy.
Yeah.
But then they switched her to being a girl.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm.
I think, it is probably better that it is a girl. Mm. Makes the relationship between her and her sister more interesting, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
I wonder if the boy would have also been like really into wearing
wearing hats,
like a floral bucket hats.
Yeah. Possibly. I mean, I guess we'll never know, because as it turned out, Alex Louise Mack was created as a girl, and Larissa Alenik cast as the lead role, and she did a wonderful job.
And a good time was had by all.
And so that brings us on to the episode of The Secret World of Alex Mack we watched today, episode 19 of season 2, World Without Alex. Callan, why don't you fill us in what happened in this episode of Alex Mack?
Yeah, so this was a bit of a weird episode. It was another one of those kind of non-canonical dream episodes, which is very closely tied to the plot of It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm.
Where the main character imagines a world in which he was never born, or in this case, she was never born.
Mm.
So Annie has an important meeting with a headhunter from MIT, and Alex accidentally uses her powers to crash the guy's car into a fire hydrant when she's trying to get her bike out, which is kind of parked in. And everyone gets really mad at her, calling her irresponsible, calling her selfish, calling her ugly, saying that she's got weird knees, just weird stuff that they're yelling at her.
They did go on about the knees for a really long time.
Yeah, for a 27-minute episode, I thought spending 14 minutes like picking apart
on the knees.
Someone's knees was a little bit self-indulgent, but, you know, it was good television nonetheless. So they're really angry at her. She kind of like runs away. And there's this great running montage where she's running against this like sunset and this kind of silhouetted Karate Kid style. She ends up in a park and rests her weary eyes at a park bench and wakes up to go home.
Not before she falls asleep, she wishes on a shooting star.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, shooting star.
Never been born.
I wish I'd never been born. Mm. What would the world look like without Alex Mack? She says.
Mm.
And she wakes up, she goes to school, and no one recognizes her. Ray is there, and he's very sharply dressed, wearing one of those like cardigans that are like folded over your shoulders.
Mm.
He works for the power plant now and is acting very like Stepford Wives-y.
Yes.
kind of roboting around. She gets kicked out of the school when she's like trying to get into her locker because there's no record of her being at that school. And she then goes home and finds that like all the family photographs, she's not in. It's taking her a while to put two and two together, but she just like doesn't exist in this world.
Mm.
Annie is having that MIT meeting again, but in this like alternative reality, Annie's really like not a very good student. And she talks about that their mum has disappeared 18 months prior. And she's kind of like been working two jobs to try and keep the family together.
Mm.
So Alex decides to go to the chemical plant, and finds Ray there to try and figure out what's going on. She also runs into George Mack, who in this alternative reality is packing chemical trucks because he lost his job as a researcher. And they find out that Barbara Mack went missing because she was the one who got doused with GC-161 instead of Alex in this world. And she's been held under captivity by Vince and Danielle, and they've been doing experiments on her. And they're about to, you know, reveal GC-161 to the world because they've been able to get all of this great research out of Barbara Mack. They try to escape. Alex tries to help Barbara make a run for it, but Vince kind of overpowers them. She runs away and runs into George and Annie and begs for their help. But they're like, I have never seen this girl before in my life. And then they catch her and start doing experiments on her.
Mm-hmm.
And she wishes that she was back home, and she taps her ruby slippers together and wakes up in hospital, and the Cowardly Lion is there, and the Tin Man.
You were there. You were there.
And Little Toto is back.
Mm.
No, she wakes up. Everything is fine. She goes back to her family. They're glad. They've forgiven her for her wrecking the interview and ruining the MIT guy's car. And everything goes back to normal because actually it's good that the moral of the story is it's good that Alex Mack is alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
It seemed like it didn't have the same kind of like character growth that It's a Wonderful Life had. Like, it's one of those cases where, and this I think happens a lot in like kids shows and stuff, where they take the main plot conceit from another piece of media, don't take any of the like underlying character motivations or reasoning behind it.
And it just kind of happens.
Yeah, it was a weird episode. I kind of felt like, did you ever stay home from school when you were really sick and would be kind of like...
Oh, no. I'm a super spreader, Cal. So no matter how sick I was out and about.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. No, did you ever have that thing where you were like at home and you were like watching kids' television, but you were kind of like half asleep and half kind of in a fever dream?
Yeah.
And then you're just like, I don't know what I just watched.
Yeah.
And like, did that actually happen? Like, you know, I would always like watch Fantasia or something. And there was like, I would just be like, I don't know how much of what I remember Fantasia being actually was in that movie. Mickey Mouse fucks in that, right?
I think similarly, being home from school was always a good time to watch like daytime television and daytime soap operas and stuff.
And Jerry Springer and Passions.
Yeah, and there were certain elements of this that had, I mean, there were bits that kind of looked like a soft focus soap opera, I guess, because they were trying to get that kind of dreamlike effect. But also the idea, like kind of being home from school is kind of like being in an alternate reality that only you are experiencing.
There is something about being sick where, it does, you're exactly right, feel like you are in this weird alternate reality, especially when you're home alone.
Yeah.
Like no one else exists and you're just like in this weird little world that consists basically of like the couch and whatever's
the couch, the pantry, and you.
This was a weird episode. Like you say, it had that daytime soap look with like a lot of Vaseline on the lens.
Just
watching this episode kind of gave me like acid flashbacks of being like a sick kid on the couch watching something and just being like, I don't know what's going on here, but it just feels a bit wrong. Like it feels a bit
Like
unnerving.
or watching like watching Fantasia, but in the context of middle of the day when no one's home, rather than on the weekend when everyone else is around and like mum's cooking dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
Like something happening in the middle of the day that shouldn't be happening in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess they did a good job of capturing the feeling of a fever dream or a nightmare.
Yeah.
Because it did all just feel very uncomfortable.
I thought it was good, though. I kind of thought this might be up your alley in the way that it was kind of like it felt like a bit of a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
The music in this one was quite good, like the underlying dread of the music. And they had these weird... It wasn't, you know those camera angles, maybe it's an effect, but when the screen kind of, it doesn't rotate, but it kind of like.
Yeah, there's a lot of Dutch tilt happening in this episode.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. And I also thought performance-wise, I don't know whether it was how it was directed, if they were given a bit more freedom, but there was just a lot more sort of energy, like particularly Danielle Atron. I thought she did a fantastic job in this one. Like she got excited about stuff.
Yeah.
She's usually like, she has her sort of
hard-nosed,
boss demeanor. But in this one, she just seemed a bit more animated.
That's true.
And the same as the scene when Alex has crashed the car and her whole family's really mad at her. Like that's quite a dynamic scene. And a lot of neighbors run out. There's a lot of extras and they're really yelling at her. They're really giving it to her.
Yeah, that's true.
It makes her run off. Like it was kind of, yeah, there was just a lot of stuff happening. A lot of stuff to take in this episode, I thought.
I think it was a good episode. But yeah, I think I like that you mentioned Twilight Zone because it does feel a bit like that. And maybe they could have gone more in that direction. Like it could have just got more and more surreal. Like yeah. I like the idea of like, George Mack having this like terrible job at the factory, but like maybe he could have been in like a ball and chain or something and like being whipped
and
by
Dave
down in the like salt mines of the chemical plant. Maybe he's got like hooks for hands because he's like lost his hands like mining chemicals or whatever. Like I think they could have just got really ridiculous. Like maybe Ray actually is a robot. And I also feel like it's always a bit of a cop out in these dream episodes where they get into a position at the end where they can't escape and then they just wake up. It feels very much like, did you ever write these stories when you were a little kid?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
You would like write this story and you wouldn't know how to end it and you would either end it like, and then I woke up, or and then a bomb went off and everyone died. It felt a little bit like that.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're going to do a dream episode, you need to still resolve the tension in the fiction of the dream world.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, because you've still, like you haven't cheated then. Like you haven't just kind of like written something that can never go anywhere. Even if it was like she died or something, like, you know, maybe they're all chasing her. George has got hooks for hands. Vince has got bionic legs.
Dave is dressed as a dominatrix.
Yeah. And is riding robotic ray dog. And then they're like chase her and she's like at the edge of a cliff and she decides to jump like Thelma and Louise style.
Yeah. She gets in a convertible. She gets in the red Hummer and drives off a cliff.
Yeah, her and Annie just hold hands and drive the car off a cliff. Like I should say it needs a little bit of that.
How do you think that the ending of this one compared to, or do you feel the same way about the ending to The Secret World of Ray Alvarado?
I feel like that one had a better transition because it came back to the pole. It kind of had the like in-world mechanism for getting them in and out of the story. And the story did kind of resolve, I think.
Yeah.
It had an arc where it was like, everyone thinks it's great that, so for refreshers of people who haven't been listening to every episode, that episode, The Secret World of Ray Alvarado, Ray hits his head on a pole and he has a extended dream sequence where he is the kid who has superpowers rather than Alex. And instead of hiding it and being secret, he just goes public and everyone loves it for a little while until it turns out that actually they're going to experiment on him.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he's being chased at the end, he runs away, hits his head on the same pole and kind of wakes back up again. And I feel like that story did resolve in that, you know, it didn't just kind of keep going until it ended.
Yeah. Didn't keep going until they ran out of time.
I mean, I guess this one kind of resolved in that they ended up catching Alex, but it just didn't. I don't know what she really learnt from it. It wasn't as satisfying.
Yeah. And really, the only real difference, I mean, obviously the point was that Alex had never been born, so her family's life was objectively worse than it was if she had been born.
Yeah.
But it seemed like her family's life was objectively worse just because Alex wasn't the one in the accident. The accident happened a little bit later and the truck hit her mum, not her. So if someone else's mum had been in the car, it would have been that family who was having a real shitty time.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen It's a Wonderful Life, but I think the moral of the story there is that he thinks that he's got like just a boring life and all of the things that he's doing are kind of meaningless, and he realizes that when he's gone, these little things that he didn't put much meaning into actually had these big effects and were like helping, and he was making a big material difference to the people's lives that he cared about.
And I feel like that
is Alex's ongoing chip on her shoulder, is that like all the attention goes to Annie, her sister, and nothing goes to her.
Yeah.
And it would have been a good realization that she does contribute to the family in small ways that she maybe doesn't realize.
Mm.
Whereas in this, it was like her contribution to the family was, taking the brunt of that chemical spill.
Yeah, taking the bullet.
Being a good like science project for her sister so she could get into MIT. Because the other episode that this actually is probably most similar to is the Christmas episode with the monkey. Where she has a similar arc and she kind of thinks that she's a bit of a fuck up, but then she does cleans up the house and like helps the parents other ways. Yeah, and they're like, we love you just the way you are, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like the writers just forgot that part of the episode. And it's a cool idea for a kids show episode. And I'm pretty sure other shows would have done this as well. And I, you know, we mentioned as well, as it's kind of like, it's definitely directly ripping off It's a Wonderful Life. But the other thing that it kind of reminds you of a little bit is like the reverse version of Home Alone. where instead of wishing that the family didn't exist, they wish that they don't exist. And this is probably a pretty relatable feeling that a kid would have.
I think so, yeah.
But yeah, they just didn't really stick the landing on it, I don't think.
Yeah.
Did you ever have like a big spat with your parents or like run away or anything like that? Get in really big trouble?
No, nothing. The only thing that really comes to mind, I never really got in lots of trouble, but I threw a lot of tantrums as a child. And I remember we were at my grandma and grandpa's one day. And I think it was some sort of family event because there were a lot of people there and I was losing my mind about something. So my dad was like, right, you need to calm down. So he like grabbed me and took me outside and took me down to the park at the end of their street just to sit down and like cool down a bit. And so we were just there and I was screaming and eventually I chilled out. And then my dad fell asleep. And when he woke up, no one remembered who he was. So my dad fell asleep. And I was still I think I was probably like grumpy. I can't even remember how old I was. This is not a super clear memory, so I must have been quite young. But I decided to walk back to my grandparents' house myself and leave my dad there to sleep. And while I was walking back, like in my mind, I was attacked by a dog.
Right.
What probably happened was a small dog came up and barked at me.
Yeah.
But I remember it being quite traumatizing at the time.
Yeah, dogs are scary when you're a kid.
So that's the closest I remember to be like storming off away from my parents, wishing that they or I didn't exist anymore. But then, you know, had my father not existed, he wouldn't have been able to run up and save me from the scary dog. So I thank him for that.
Yeah. Did you learn a valuable lesson?
No, because I still throw tantrums pretty hardcore at family events.
Do you remember what you were throwing a tantrum about?
Nah, no, it could have been anything, honestly, when I was a kid. Could have been anything.
Speaking of being traumatized by animals, it reminded me of a story from when I was a kid. And I don't remember this, but I've had it retold to me. I would have been quite young and was at my uncle's place with my mum and dad. And my dad is wandering around looking for me. He's like, where's Callan? And my uncle's like, oh, we locked him in the chicken shed. And Dad's like, but he's afraid of the chickens. And he's like, well, we'll see.
Oh, my God.
And I still don't really understand why I was locked in there. I think it was because it was like...
Oh, it was a gag.
They were like, this kid shouldn't be afraid of chickens. We're going to lock him in the chicken shed until he like can take a joke.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, classic.
Wow.
Classic uncle story.
And how did you feel about chickens after that experience?
I'm still afraid of chickens.
Yeah.
And I'll run away. And then I remember...
How do you feel about your uncle? Are you afraid of your uncle? Because I'd be terrified of my uncle.
Probably more afraid of my uncle than I am of the chickens. And then I remember this. You know how like you have this, there's this uncanny ability when you're a kid and you're watching a movie that your parents will always walk in on the most inappropriate moment. So it'll either be like the moment that is like the most violence or if there are like boobs in the movie.
Yep. And you watch some fucked up movies.
Oh, I sure did. But this movie was like not that.
was it the bit in Fantasia where Mickey f***s?
Yeah, it was that bit, yeah. No, there's a movie called Chicken Park, and it was like a Hot Shots style spoof of Jurassic Park, except they were all chickens. And I just remember watching this.
That is one joke that has been stretched out into a 90-minute movie.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Like, I haven't seen it since I was very young, so I feel like it probably is not a great movie.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
one of the ones that, like, people remember and still talk about.
That's barely a tweet.
Yeah. Yeah, but I do remember there was a bit in that movie where, because it was kind of like, it would have been made in the, I guess it would have been made in the 90s, so this is maybe a little bit irregular, but you know, like that genre of movies from like the 80s and maybe I guess the early 90s, where if it was kind of an irreverent comedy, there would just be a lot of like boobs in it.
Yeah.
There was one scene where they were kind of doing like a bit of a King Kong spoof, I think. And they had this woman tied up to like a pole, like you know how King Kong, like they tie up, and like King Kong's gonna come out and grab her, but it's like a giant chicken and she's naked and they like breaking a giant egg on top of her.
Okay.
Very weird stuff. And this is why I have a giant egg fetish. But yeah, and then my parents walked in on that scene and was like, what are you watching?
Did you have a weird taste? Because you don't have a weird taste in movies, but you're into movies enough to like know and appreciate some pretty obscure movies. Was this something that developed at a young age? Like, why were we watching Chicken Park?
I think I would always rent movies based on like what had the kind of like most disturbing cover art. Like, I spent a lot of time at the video store just like looking at covers of movies that I would not be allowed to rent. And then just like, you know, saying, can we get this? Can we get this? Can we get this? And generally, it was like, you know, the eighth or ninth pick of mine. They'd be like, all right, I guess you can have that. So Chicken Park would have been one of those. I also remember that I wasn't allowed to watch Jurassic Park at the cinema when it came out.
Right.
Because my parents went to see it before it was before I went to see if I would be old enough, and they decided that I wasn't, and I was very upset about that because I really wanted to see it.
Yeah. So you saw a few years later on video.
So I guess I watched Chicken Park as an alternative.
You're just like, maybe this will give me the gist of it.
Yeah.
I thought Ray did a pretty good job in this episode.
He was hamming it up.
Yeah, his whole thing is that because Alex was never born, Ray doesn't have a best friend.
Yeah.
So as a result, he thinks Vince from the plant is his best friend.
There was a great line. He's like, Ray, why is your best friend 40 years old?
And it's so like and Alex and him actually have a conversation about it when she asks why his best friend is 40 years old. And he sort of says, you know, when I was growing up, there was no one my age to be friends with. And it's like, Ray, you and Alex met at school.
They were their next door neighbors.
But there's other people in the school. He's not the only eighth grader.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. It's just like no one in the houses directly near him were the same age as him, so he didn't make other friends. But he did start going to school at like at age six or whatever, so you should make friends there, right? He's not going to school with a bunch of 40-year-olds. He's not going to community college with Vince and Dave.
And like Alex Mack isn't, you know, she's not that special. Find another friend.
Yeah.
Did you also notice, Callan, at the end of the dream sequence portion of this episode, so Vince has captured Alex Mack. He's tied her to a table, and he's telling her that since Barbara Mack has been freed, now Alex is going to be the subject of the testing, the chemical testing. And just before, I think he's going to spray her with GC-161. Do you remember what he said? He said, "Welcome to the secret world of GC-161.
He did say that. Yeah, that was good. And then Alex turned to the camera and goes, "Ah, the secret world of Alex Mack.
That's a good idea."
I also I liked when she met George Mack, who was like, you know, looking 15 years older because he'd been slaving away at the coalface of he had like the black lung he was kind of copying as well. That they introduce Alex and like, "This is Alex, she's taking a tour around," and he goes, "Ah, Alex, I would have called my second daughter Alex if I had had one." Like, do you think people walk around saying shit like that? That's a really creepy thing to say.
That's a fact that I keep front of mind.
Yeah, like if I meet anyone with a name who might be an unborn child of mine, I just go, "Ah, yes,
yeah, that's not my daughter's name, that's my imaginary non-existent daughter's name."
Yeah, this is strange. It could have been stranger, though.
I think, and this is a possible spoiler, but from what I've read on, like, when I, you know, look through the Wikipedia page for Mac facts and stuff, there's mention of it becoming, like, darker as the seasons go on.
Oh, that's good.
And as Alex ages, you know, she'll be in the ninth grade next year.
Yeah.
10th grade the year after that. So it might get a bit kookier, maybe a bit more serious, but maybe some more, the stakes might be a bit higher.
I'm down for that.
Yeah. One thing, when Alex, goes back to her house the first time and sees that she's not in any of the photos, she runs up to, her bedroom, and sees that it's no longer her and Annie's bedroom. It's just Annie's bedroom and all her stuff is gone, which means she didn't have any hats.
Yeah.
"She doesn't have a cat. Her mom's name isn't Pat, but she always, well, almost always wears a hat. Alex Mack wears a hat."
How about that?
Just one hat this episode. Just one hat.
Well, when you go to another parallel dimension and none of your hats are there, you don't have a lot of options.
No, you've just got to take the hats that you've got on your head.
Mm. With nothing but the hat on your head. Yeah, there should have been maybe a scene where she goes to her favorite hat shop and she's like, "Remember me, it's Alex, your number one customer." And we're like, "We don't have a number one customer. Our number one customer is Lewis Driscoll." And then it pans over and Lewis is like wearing three hats and everyone's like applauding and like holding them on the shoulders. "Lewis, Lewis." He's like, "With no one else in this town wearing novelty hats, I've become the most popular kid in school.
Everyone's forgotten about my personality."
"I hide my personality under an array of different hats. I have a different hat for every occasion."
You know how people who wear hats often have cool personalities?
Yeah, they're not trying to distract you from anything.
Or another alternate timeline is that Alex, she goes to the plan and George, she sees George Mack is old. She's like, and he doesn't remember this. She's like, "This is terrible." And then she goes to her house and all this stuff is gone. She's not in any of the photos. She's like, "Oh, this is awful." And she goes to her favorite hat shop and it's like closed due to lack of business. And it's all boarded up and dusty.
She was keeping the hat industry of Paradise Valley up and running. And you know, that's like, you know, that hat money trickles down to the rest of the economy. So probably all of High Street is closed. Yeah. That's simple trickle down hat economics.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that's just going to about do it for us for this episode of The Secret World of Alex Mack, episode 19 of season 2. Callan, have you had a good time?
I'm just imagining a world in which we didn't do this podcast.
Oh, God.
Now I've had a good time.
I'm imagining like a literal apocalypse, like rivers of lava flowing down the street.
A world where the secret world of Alex Mack was never recorded in the 90s.
We'd probably be doing the secret world of Clarissa Explains It All, the children's show that preceded the secret world of Alex Mack on the Nickelodeon Saturday Night lineup.
The secret world of That's So Raven.
So join us next time as we watch episode 20, the final episode of season 2 of The Secret World of Alex Mack.
Oh my God.
Big season finale coming up. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
We'll have to do something special. Should we wear party hats? Their hats.
Yeah, sure. Let's wear party hats and wear our Ray outfit, and you can wear your Alex outfit.
So join us next week for that. Until then, you can email us on secretworldpod@gmail.com. Obviously, dick pics, keep them coming in. Until then, I've been Jack.
I've been Cal.
My best friend Ray thinks it's cool.
And my sister Annie thinks I'm a science project.
And we'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.